1995 Sunstein Symposium presents a devotional, session 301, with Philip Barlow.
Friend in Manhattan not too long ago, and I needed to rearrange my airport stuff, so I looked in the white pages on the day before I was to leave New York and opened up the 9X white pages business listings. And in them, I didn't know how to look in them, so I looked cleverly enough under A for airport to see what happened there. And I discovered an interesting thing that will, I hope, not bore you. I found it interesting, and then I thought it was kind of an unepiphany. I found that there were a lot of A's in the Manhattan phone book, and they go like this: A this, A that, and then A, and then A, and so on. Only the so on in the Manhattan business pages is a real serious so on. It starts out, when we get past certain stuff that I won't bore you with A Amesto Construction Corporation. That is, the idea is if you put an A before it, you get earlier in the listings, and hopefully if you're going to build a new skyscraper in New York, someone will grab you, I guess. A All City Lock Service. Inevitably, however, this sort of thing led another entrepreneurial soul to preempt competitors by placing two A's before the company name: AA Dental Care, AA Drilling and Topping Company. Well, this sort of thing clearly proliferated, presumably over time. Why not A-AAA Emergency Towing, or the exotic car wax A-AAAA Emergency Towing? Now, once one gets started on this sort of thing, it's hard to discern just where the limits of human imagination or patience or of 9X or Eastern Bell might occur. So, documentably, we have several pages of listings that go like this, and the champion, when last I looked, was certainly not the quadruple A Fireproof Floors Company, nor the Sextuple A International Dating Service, nor even the Octuple A, if that's a correct word, followed by, that is, AAAAAABBEE Moving and Storage Company. Rather, it was the Adirondack Rent Company, preceded by 20 A's. But that was clearly not an anomaly. These are filled with anywhere from 1 to 20 A's as they compete with one another. In other words, the moral of this story is that human beings are nuts. And if you put enough of them together, it might look... If you put enough of them together in a confined space, things might look a lot like New York City. Now, the reason I would bother you with that, what could be, what is, from one angle of vision, a trivial story or trivial thing in the universe, is that I think it can be put in a non-trivial context. Or at least all my friends understand that I make stuff out of nothing, so this is what I'm doing. And so I call it my encounter with the 9X white pages an unepiphany. That is, not a direct encounter with evil forces, some devil or another, but rather a positive non-encounter with God. That is, it was not nothing. Kind of like the air is, if you're not thinking very well, you think of the air as nothing, or you don't, that is, you don't think of the air, but with a little thought, we remember that we can get cancer from the air, or life from the air, or send up tons of machinery on the air, etc. We use the air. The air is not nothing. And this, what I'm calling an unepiphany, is not nothing, but a positive absence. okay, of an encounter with God. Now, I am a person, for good or ill, of deep religious convictions, and my personal deep religious convictions are colored by my Mormon allegiance. So I understand that varies among you, and some of you are people of less or more religious convictions, and ones that are different than mine, and ones that are colored by your own history and denominational perspectives. But mine is colored by my Mormon allegiance. To be real brief, since we don't have too much time, which I better be imaginative enough to keep track of, I take the core gospel insight in my religious affiliation to be linked with the idea of being and perpetual becoming. And naturally, we could make a lot out of that. We could start talking about John Brooks' Refiner's Fire, or we could talk about lots of stuff. So I allow for complicated theological and historical context as that insight emerged. But nevertheless, my interpretation of the core gospel insight has to do with being and becoming, which is diametrically opposed to the core insight or the core assertions of Oriental religions, for instance, which has to do with unbecoming. Or to get what I think is important, to put it in the words of one BYU philosopher, Dennis Rasmussen, the whole of your life is a question posed by God. How will you respond? The whole of your life is a question posed by God. How will you respond? And to Barlowize it a little bit, what will you become? The primal spiritual threat, if to the extent that I'm right that that's the core gospel insight, and I understand that we could have complex conversations about that assertion, but to the extent that I'm right, the primal spiritual threat becomes that which limits, or in ultimate cases, that which damns, and most often, especially for my purposes this morning, that which distorts that becoming, so that we are in danger of becoming self-caricatures, self-parodies. The danger is that I may come to resemble a human being to the same extent that a Big Mac resembles real food. Now, I won't take too much of your time here this morning hammering on easy targets. It's pretty easy for a Sunstone audience to obliterate a target like a Sunday school class or aspects of the traditional church, so that, as happened last Sunday when I visited a Sunday school class, the entire affair seemed scripted and not growing. Okay, but we know that. That's easy, and we don't need to. We know that that happens, that is, or can happen. Nor do I need to take your time talking about other religious examples. I was reading in the newspaper not long ago about an evangelist who was visiting Salt Lake City from Wyoming, and the topic was hell. Who will go there and where it is? So those sorts of topics are easy targets for a Sunstone audience and probably not worth your time this morning. Nor do I need to take your time with a topic like lawsuits. I read in my area of Kentucky and Indiana of an ongoing case where a person with multiple personality disorder was suing his therapist because one of his personalities had hit another one. A former University of Miami quarterback sued the University of Miami for not making him the starting quarterback because it hurt his chances at a professional football career. Again, those are targets, maybe not worth your time this morning. Rather, what I'd like to talk about for the next 5 or 10 minutes is a little bit more about unepiphanies as the primal spiritual threat, because they are so diffuse, because we breathe them and we misunderstand them as nothing, like misunderstanding the air. The sort of thing I have in mind, since we need to be brief, is thinking about the spiritual danger to my son who likes sports like I sort of do and did growing up. And he's good at them. And he's good at playing them. And I associate with his feelings of joy in the participation of them. I love the competition, if it's friendly competition, of reaching to the edge of your resources to get to the ball. And I love to leave my feet and get it. But it seems to me that one of the things that happens in America or in enjoying sports is that there's a current, a cultural current associated with them. The current that I'm referring to goes like this. One enjoys playing sports, and therefore one sometimes enjoys watching sports and watching others perform well, the exercise that I myself have done actively and taken joy in. Then one comes to enjoy watching the activity on television as opposed to watching it in person. Then one comes to have interest in reading about the event in the paper. And then one comes to care about batting averages and statistics about what one has watched on television or read in the paper. And then one comes to care, evidently, about the personalities, not only of the players, but of those who report the statistics that we read about in the newspaper. Thus, we have sweeps, TV Nielsen ratings and sweeps weeks that themselves become the news, right? This makes small headlines about who's in what place when. Or, of course, we can get outside of the issue of sports and see that Oscar night itself becomes an event. That is, the spiritual danger involved is an increasing distancing from reality, from the essence of the event, into watching the event, and ultimately watching ourselves watch those who report the events. And we could come up with an infinite number of examples. I think that there's a genuine spiritual danger in the process, and it could be put in a trivial or an important context. And I think it has a countless number of analogs spiritually. C.S. Lewis talked about one of them, for instance, when in his little Screwtape Letters, where he has the undersecretary of hell writing to one of the tempters in the field about how you get to John Doe, he says the idea is to think of your subject, think of Scott Kinney as a series of concentric circles, the inner core of which is his will to act. The next ring is his intellect, and the outer ring is his fantasies. And your job is not to try to turn Scott Kinney into an evil person, because most people aren't, and Scott isn't. The trick is to take... Scott Kinney's going to be a mixture of good impulses and bad impulses, and your task, if you're tempting him, is to try to foster the good impulses away from the will and into the intellect, and away from the intellect and into fantasy, and take his bad impulses out of the realm of just consciousness or fantasies and foster them inwards towards the intellect and finally into the will, so that Scott Kinney, who, like all of us, is a mixture of good and bad, can understand himself as a good person angsting over starving people in Laos while he never gets around to helping his neighbor next door lift her groceries up the stairs, sort of thing. We can get distanced from reality in the same way that we come somehow to care about Oscar night or sweeps rating. Another thing I read in the paper recently is the New York Times bestseller list. And I've been struck with this from time to time, so this time I bothered to cut it out. I don't know when this appeared, a year or so ago. What struck me was that the list was, the list reads like this. The second bestseller on the nonfiction list is Howard Stern's Private Parts. The third bestseller is Thomas More's Care of the Soul. And the first bestseller is Betty's Embraced by the Light. It seemed to me that this could be put in a trivial context, or it might be a droplet of something important about our society. Private Parts, Embraced by the Light, and Care of the Soul. And the whole list is like that. There are a few incidentals, but we have Nightmares and Dreamscapes on the fiction list by Stephen King, on the same list as The Road Less Traveled or Where Angels Walk. We have Listening to Prozac and A Book of Angels. We have Disclosure and Without Remorse, and Homicidal Psycho Jungle Cat, along with The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. In other words, it seems to me that what people are reading reveals either a schizophrenic society or a society of schizophrenics. We read a lot about sicko stuff and about how to pull ourselves up out of sicko stuff. It seems to me that that's interesting and is a kind of a self-caricature at the social level. Kind of a self-parity as a nation. Now, in the last few minutes, could I bring it home a little more locally to ourselves for our own reflections? It seems to me that LDS Church officials, whom I respect and choose to have allegiance to, are making an error in discouraging and condemning wholesale things like the Sunstone Symposium. And you're here, so that's not a startling assertion, right? It's an error, in my judgment, to promote safety over growth, or as Mufasa tells Simba, you are more than you have become. And to castigate something that's calculated for growth and expiration seems to be an error. But since you, who are here, take that for granted by and large, I'm assuming, I'd like us also maybe to think about why that is so and transcend cliches and easy answers about it. That is, in addition to the errors behind such a castigation of the symposium, are, I think, real concerns about real spiritual threats. And I've watched it happen, so I don't think it's vacuous. It seems to me that there are spiritual threats, and the revelations of spiritual maladies manifest among us sometimes at the symposium. And I experience them, because of the way I've been thinking recently, as self-caricatures, that is, us caricaturing ourselves. When my little girl Lindsay last year, who was three, who was doing a pretty good job mastering toilet training, wet her pull-up. If you don't know what a pull-up is these days, it's sort of a newfangled diaper, half-diaper hybrid thing. And she had a sort of a lapse. You know, she started wetting her bed and diaper again, and so we indicated disappointment at that once. Don't judge me as a parent. I don't know how to do this stuff. But she wet her pull-up, and so I watched her mother say, oh, did you wet your pull-up? Did you wet again? And Lindsay said, no. This seemed contrary to the evident situation. And she said, the mother said, Lindsay, did you wet your diaper again? And Lindsay said, no. And so I hope with love we had to gingerly sort of tear off the little strips, and then the diaper kerplunked. It was heavy. It was saturated with wetness. And this seemed apparent even to Lindsay as she looked down, and so she looked up at us and said, Brett did it. It does seem to me that I've witnessed over the years and at this symposium, at least on the radio, gratuitous finger pointing rather than thoughtful exploration, informed thoughtful exploration that necessarily finds problems. Seems to me there's a Brett did it amongst us sometimes. And the institutional church is a very easy target, more or less like the federal government, if one is just looking for that. It seems to me I found among us, and I've looked, I'm talking for my own self-edification here too, but it seems to me that sometimes what I'm hearing is not a thoughtful, I mean sometimes too, of course, because I am edified by the symposium generally, but sometimes what I think I hear is the caricatured pursuit of fame, confusing being someone with seeming to be someone or being someone in a public forum. I hope that doesn't need much elaboration here, but I liked the phrase by a colleague back in Hanover, celebrities are people who are well known for being famous. There's ultimately not much there. I heard on the radio on the very first symposium I listened to on the way here to Salt Lake City a couple of days ago, Thursday, I guess, an introduction to a person who was to participate. And the woman was lauding the participant to follow because he has sued virtually every institution in the Salt Lake Valley and offended all the others. And the audience chortled, and the context was, aren't we naughty and irreverent and independent thinkers championing virtue against big monolithic giants? Nah. What I heard was a caricature. What I heard in the introducer was not spiritually healthy, not particularly clever or constructive. In another session, again on the radio, an impassioned manifesto for religious tolerance, a purported manifesto for religious tolerance, ran roughshod over everyone by the end of a session, over everyone else who tried to speak and offer an alternate perspective. I have been wounded. Therefore, you shall not speak, was what I heard. Rather a caricature while the person was pronouncing tolerance. I sometimes hear amongst us and catch in myself pretensions. Every once in a while in my profession of teaching college, I find myself acting like a professor instead of being a human being exploring. I hear at the symposium among good and edifying explorations resentments and hurts, and that's okay. There's a forum for that. In fact, we need to address them. But I do think Carl Jung was right when he said that most human neuroses are a result of the inability to accept legitimate suffering. That is, the inability to know how to suffer well. And I'm not suggesting that means be quiet or don't address problems, but most human mental illness that does not have a physiological base is a consequence of the refusal to accept at a deep level legitimate suffering and creatively respond to it. And finally, I sometimes hear amongst us, and again in my own mouth, so I'm doing self-exploration here, inert knowledge, the proliferation of inert knowledge, which is the embodiment of what I mean by an own epiphany. It's a positive something, but when I emerge from a session with the positive experience that I have not encountered God here, by positive I mean a something instead of a nothing, then out of all of the infinite alternatives with which I could be spending my time, I find that that space has been filled with an unencounter. I think rather it would be healthier if we all took seriously the mottos and explanation offered on the Sunstone Symposium. I don't know if Albert Peck or someone else is responsible for this, but the title of the program is Anselm's phrase from the 11th century, Faith Seeking Understanding. Quote, "This symposium is dedicated to the idea that the truths of the gospel of Jesus Christ are better understood and, as a consequence, better lived when they are freely and frankly explored within the society of saints. We recognize that the search for things that are, have been, and are to be is a sifting process in which much chaff will have to be inspected and threshed before wheat can be harvested. In sponsoring this symposium, we welcome the honest ponderings of Latter-day Saints and their friends and expect that everyone will approach all issues, no matter how difficult, with intelligence and goodwill. I hope that we either redefine the statement of what the symposium is about, or that we take that very seriously and work very hard at it so that our spiritual and mental space is not dosed with unepiphanies, especially invisible ones." Okay? Thanks for your tolerance and attendance.